Sweet little words made for silence, not talk. So how are we to proceed with a podcast? All the elements of what I love about Nightwish. Do you think you'll listen to some more Nightwish now?
Oh yeah, I love it.
I don't know what I'm listening to, but I like it.
Come on guys, don't let me down. Decades Tour 2, I want to see this one on the set list.
The podcast and the pendulum.
The podcast and the pendulum.
Podcast and the pendulum.
The podcast and the pendulum. Hello everyone and welcome back to the podcast and the pendulum. My name is Simon, but you probably know that by now. How are you? I hope that you are well. All is okay on my side of the world here in the UK. We seem to be getting back to some sense of normality after this COVID, but there's definitely plenty of changes to be seen. And one of them, I think, is a very interesting one and very relevant to the podcast, a podcast about music, in that UK venues have been given the go-ahead to reopen from the 1st of August. So I'm thinking when I post this episode, they will be good to go. But... and it's quite a big but, they have to conduct social distancing, which a lot of smaller venues are saying they cannot physically do, which I completely understand. I was due to go and see Visions of Atlantis and Ad Infinitum in London in September, and they've just rescheduled to next year, which I think is the best decision, especially for those kind of shows, because there's kind of two ends of the spectrum for smaller shows that Visions of Atlantis will be doing, and club gigs, if you will, then it's going to be really difficult to get people to socially distance in a small standing venue. I know that a lot of you guys have probably been to a lot of music events, and a lot of metal bands play in smaller capacity venues, and you can only imagine how difficult it would be to socially distance there. Also, how uncomfortable it would be to have to wear a mask in those kind of environments where it's very warm and you're very close together. So it's just not feasible, really. And then on the other side of the coin, you have the bigger venues, and that's where it brings me to Nightwish. I have tickets for the Human Nature Tour, as I'm sure so many of you do. I'll be planning on going to the London date, which is going to be at Wembley Arena. A huge venue, I mean, it's an arena, and it's just not realistic. You think how many tickets Nightwish would have already have sold. They have sold out various venues on this tour already. They haven't sold out London, but I imagine they've sold more than half the tickets. And I think it looks like in order to socially distance in these kind of venues, you'd be running at a 25% capacity. So for Nightwish to actually go ahead with some of these shows, I imagine they would have to refund a certain number of people. And long story short, it's just not going to happen. So to be honest, I'm sat here waiting for the announcement that the Human Nature Tour will be rescheduled. I know that a lot of people might be upset to hear that. And yeah, it is disappointing. I love gigs. It's one of the... Well, it is the main thing that I do. It's my main hobby. I love going to gigs and... I miss it. I miss it so much. You know, I watched the Lacuna Coil live DVD recently and just thought, oh, I wish I was there in that crowd getting my life to this band. And it is really hard, but it's the right decision to make. Because what is even the point? Imagine, just imagine, it would never happen, but imagine Nightwish did a show with a 25% capacity, even standing had to keep their social distancing. It would just not work. There's an energy there from dancing and punching the air with everyone in the audience that would completely be missed, and yet we'd all be paying the same price for it. You know, it's not gonna work. And likewise for the band, the energy that they feel from the crowd would just be stunted, I feel, because it's just a very strange circumstance. So yeah, that's my stance on this whole thing. I think that the Human Nature Tour will be cancelled. I am starting to record little bits of these episodes in advance. I'm actually recording this a week or so before you guys will hear it. So chances are, I think it will be any day now anyway. Another reason, if I've not convinced you enough, that I think it will be delayed or postponed or cancelled. I don't think it will be cancelled. I think it will be postponed. is also the fact of where they're traveling to. It's a world tour, isn't it, basically, or a European tour. So they're going from, I believe, like Paris to Spain to the UK for only 2 dates. I just can't imagine with all of the restrictions that are in place. In the UK, it's quite lenient. I think from most countries now, you can come in to the UK from European countries and you don't have to quarantine or anything like that. But a lot of other countries will have their own set of rules. It would just be a complete mess, I think. So yeah. Well, nice that we've started off on such a high note, Simon. Well done on that. I hope I haven't upset you too much. I've seen a lot of discussion, especially on Facebook and in various groups, about the Human Nature Tour and whether we think it will go ahead. And like I said, my stance is very much I don't think it will, but I do think that is the right decision, as heartbreaking as that will be. But definitely reschedule, and hope in 2021 we can we'll have a vaccine hopefully, and we can go to these shows and really enjoy them, and enjoy them even more so because of the wait that we've had to go through. I mean, this Visions of Atlantis show I mentioned, it'll be the third time it's been rescheduled. Likewise, the Worlds Collide tour, I'm planning on going to Evanescence within Temptation, and that's going to have been rescheduled. It's the third date that we've had for that. And I just think after all of this anticipation and getting through what we're going through now, it will be such an amazing celebration. And even if it gets rescheduled again because it takes a little bit longer, it will be worth the wait, 100%. Better to go there with a full community of healthy, happy metal fans than just be broken by this disease. So yeah, I will lift everyone's spirits up a little bit now, because that was quite disappointing news. But today we have a really fantastic episode. You will have seen from the name, we're going to be talking about While Your Lips Are Still Red. Now, this is a very interesting song. I say that about a lot of them, because before I do these episodes, I always do quite a bit of research, and even songs that I don't find too fascinating, by the point of recording an episode, I genuinely do find all of them interesting, and they have a lot of trivia and facts around them that I'm really excited to share with you guys. And this one is very special for me in because it's what you would call, I guess, a bonus track, a B-side. It was on the Amaranth single, but yet it's taken on this life of its own. People seem to love this song. I see the reaction to it, and it's huge. You would think that this was one of Nightwish's lead singles. People just absolutely love it. And we'll also hear from Kiki a little bit later, who has appeared on a few episodes, but the first song that he heard, and for a while the only song he heard by Nightwish, was this one, While Your Lips Are Still Red. So I'm really interested to understand how this B-side, this hidden track hidden away on the Amaranth single, became such a staple in the band's catalogue and a hugely recognised song by them. We've also got Nemesis on the podcast. I love Nemesis. So I have amazing memories of Nemesis back when I first started to discover metal music. Shortly after I really got into Nightwish, I met a wonderful girl called Tanya at my very first concert. We were queuing up to meet After Forever. So it's all very cyclical. Floor was behind that door. I was waiting to meet her, and I was talking about how I love Nightwish and I love After Forever and Within Temptation. And she said, you should hear this band called Nemesis. They have an album called Mana. This was very early in Nemesis' career, and their sound has changed quite a lot, but it's been really fantastic to be on this journey with them. They are a very interesting Dutch band. I've used interesting a lot, but I do think that they are. And when you hear the interview that we did a little bit later in the podcast, you will see they've been through quite a few twists and turns in their sound. Some of it you might love, some of it you might not love, but I definitely think they're worth checking out. They are a really cool band, and one I'm really proud to have on the podcast. So, as always, let's get into it. We're here to talk about Nightwish. So let's do it. While Your Lips Are Still Red. I want to start this episode talking about this song with my friend Kiki. So he's been on quite a few episodes. He was on recently Crownless and Creek Mary's Blood as well. But this is the first song that we actually spoke about. And this is the song that I found out he liked Nightwish because he was talking about this song. And before he went away on his studies last year, we sat down and had a little chat about how he discovered this song and also how famous are Nightwish within Vietnam, his homeland.
Hello. Hello, my name is Kiki. I'm from Vietnam.
He's from Vietnam, but he's living at the moment in Nottingham, so he's not Skyping me. He's actually here in person.
Yes, I'm here in person. Can you hear me? <I'm not>
So actually, this is quite a sad time because Kiki, very excitingly, has just been given an opportunity to go and study in Lisbon and then Oslo. So we only have you for a few more days, don't we?
Yeah, I'm quite sad right now. But yeah, it's an exciting time, but you can't really shake away the feeling of that. And you're leaving everything behind 4 years. That's quite a lot of memories.
Maybe we shouldn't be talking about such a sad song. If you're feeling sad, you might get quite emotional.
That's fine.
Okay, so While Your Lips Are Still Red was, of course, a bonus track from the Dark Passion Play era. I have to be honest, and during this time was quite hectic for me. I think it was around the time I was going to university, so I wasn't really following Nightwish as closely as I have been before and since. So I actually came across this song a little bit later than everyone when I was digging into the bonus tracks that came up in this era. So as it goes, I don't actually have that many memories of the track. I was surprised to hear a Nightwish song that didn't have any female vocals on. Of course, I think the emphasis that they put on Annette, her being the new vocalist, was such a major part of the Dark Passion Play era that it was interesting to see them put out a single essentially with only Marco's voice on. But Kiki, this is actually the first Nightwish song you ever heard, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Probably around just a year or so after it was released, so that quite early, like considering that Vietnam is not exactly very up to date with the track, like with the Billboard.
Not bad. How is metal music received in Vietnam?
It's quite a niche. It's quite a niche area. Okay. There's only some people, like specific people, who are interested in metal. It's not something that is well received by the general public, or already US UK. That's how we call it. US UK music is quite a niche area as well already.
Okay.
Most people listen to Vietnamese pop song.
Right. Okay.
So pop songs only like students, high school students who are interested, or like who have a bit of, you know, live in the country, like a city, or maybe more a little bit westernized, would listen to those songs, like pop songs, but then metal is really a niche area.
Okay, so it begs the question, how did you discover this song?
I remember, I think it was, later days of high school.
Okay.
So I have a very close friend. She actually calls me her wife. So she is my husband at the time, and I'm her wife.
Very wow. Modern relationship.
Yes.
Role reversal.
Yeah. This is embarrassing. But in class we didn't really do anything. Like, we didn't really listen to the teachers, and because we are like the taller guys and girls, so we sit at the very back, and nobody paid attention to us. So instead of that's embarrassing. Instead of focusing on what the teacher said, we just took out our MP3 players.
Okay.
That's the time. MP3 players, or yeah, I think that's MP3 players.
Mm-hmm.
And just listen to music. Like, oh yeah, people should usually say, oh, look at that, like husband and wife, like they never pay attention to what the teacher said. Like, listen to music, having the time in their own world. But yeah, so I think she introduced that to me.
Okay.
We have similar taste in music.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
one day she just like, yo, like I've got some really nice ballad I want you to listen to. And I think I've got hooked like right at the beginning.
Okay. So I suppose actually it's quite apt that you discovered it, because the song is all about kiss while your lips are still red, so do what you want to do while you still can. So that's exactly what you were doing. You were sat at the back of the class doing what you wanted to do, even if you shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
So I'm really intrigued on one thing. So as I mentioned in my experience, Nightwish is one of the most famous female-fronted metal bands, and one of their USPs, especially when they were coming up, was that they have a female vocalist. Yeah. And then this song actually has no female vocalist. So when you first heard Nightwish, did you think that it was a male-fronted band?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was quite surprised when later I found out, like, oh, actually, the majority of the other songs have female vocalists. And, like, why? Like, who is this guy?
Yeah, indeed.
And then later on, I figured out, oh, yeah, that's actually, like, more band members.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that is quite interesting because, I mean, through their whole discography, I think there's probably less than 5 songs that only have male vocals on. So you found quite a niche song within a niche genre in your niche country. So what does the song mean to you? So what made you fall in love with it so much?
Oh, just like the, how to say, just a very smooth, easy to listen to melody. Mm-hmm. And it's more, you know, I love the song, but I think it also relates very much to the fact that I was with my close friend at that time, which introduced that to me, so it's like linked to good memories. But more like objectively speaking, I think this is an easy song to listen to, especially with Asian countries, Vietnamese, people. We tend to enjoy more ballads than heavy metals. Yeah.
Songs. Okay.
So yeah.
Fit in.
Yeah.
Okay, and so lastly, Kiki is actually a really good singer. So would you ever be tempted to perform this song at one of your acoustic nights?
Oh my god. I don't know. I think I might have already tempted to like sing it a lot of the time in the bathroom, but but not on stage yet.
Okay.
But, who knows? I mean, I'll try if I think there was it would be good enough, and then who knows, but
if it happens, I'll record it for the podcast so everyone can hear. Okay.
Hopefully.
Kiki talks really warmly about this song, and he is certainly not on his own. This is a song, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, that a lot of fans really, really love, despite it only being a B-side. But we do need to remember that most B-sides won't get their own video. And because this was linked with a Finnish film at the time, it did get a music video featuring Marco and Tuomas. And even reading through those comments on the video, people really love this song. A lot of people are saying that it's their favorite song, their ultimate Nightwish song. And it's so interesting to see people coming to the band through this music, exactly like I said to Kiki earlier, to have them hear a Nightwish song that is so mellow, and with Marco, a male vocalist, feels worlds away from the Nightwish that you would hear on Wishmaster, for example, on Oceanborn, and even the band that they are now. They've definitely leaned more into Marco and Troy on vocals. They're no longer, I feel it's a discredit now to call them just a female fronted band, because particularly on Human Nature, they really did lean into Marco and Troy's voices on certain songs. I mean, they both got a lead song, for example. But this is definitely, for me, one of the strongest Marco solos. Although, having said that, I have to say it, and I'm going to get it out the way, this is not my favourite song by a long shot. I never really paid that much attention to it. Back in the days of when it came out on Amaranth, I didn't give it too much attention. I listened to it, I thought, yeah, this is pleasant, but it didn't really stand out as one of my favorites. So to see the fan community at large really loving this song, that's great, but it's just not really resonating with me. And I can't really tell you why that is. I did wonder if it was because I always prefer female vocals. Generally, I do in my music. But even still, Human Nature, my favorite song, is Endlessness. So I don't know that that's it. Generally, I prefer more up-tempos, and this is definitely not that. And also, as crazy as it might sound, I really like a song that fits firmly within an era and within an album. I feel like coherence of an album really counts to me, and it really helps me understand a song, and this is kind of an outlier. So
I always find that bonus tracks and B-sides always do have a little bit of extra work to do, in my view, to get me fully on board. And that's just something that I feel when I'm listening to music. It does feel a little bit, like I say, an outlier. So all in all, I don't love it as much as most people do, but I definitely don't dislike it either. I think it's surely got its merits. And the way Nightwish pull this out and get such an amazing reaction, I just can't stop thinking about the fact that this was just on the Amaranth single, and yet it is so revered by the fan community and the band themselves, it seems. Although I do wish they would give that much respect and time to Escapist, because I really want to hear Floor singing Escapist. I really want it to happen. A testament to how powerful the love is for this song, on the Reddit knockout for Nightwish bonus tracks, While Your Lips Are Still Red came in a very worthy second place, just behind Escapist, and the votes were really, really close. So it just goes to show, it is so well loved, and that's probably the reason why the band brought it back out on the Endless Forms Most Beautiful tour. Partway through that tour, Thomas was speaking to Elise from Metal Chest of Wonders, who asked if they were going to put any new songs on the set list, and he said, yes, the original plan was that we would play While Your Lips Are Still Red and Edema Rue, and he also talked about potentially practicing them in time for the London show. Not great news for Edema Rue, but it did work out well for While Your Lips Are Still Red, and it got included in following performances. I think it's a nice moment for Marco to take the fall, and especially with his solos becoming more prominent throughout their later careers on tracks like The Islander, and also of course on Endlessness on the new album. It's nice for him to have that moment on stage, and also for Floor to have a little break. God bless her. I'm sure she appreciates someone else taking the lead for a few minutes. But one thing I did notice, and a lot of fans I'm sure noticed, is that when this was performed previously, it would just be Marco on vocals, whereas now Floor's in the band, she still stays on stage and performs really lovely backing vocals that add a really nice dynamic to it. Their voices work really well together, and Floor has a real talent for not overshining despite the power in her voice. I think it works really well, and we hear that on Vehicle of Spirit as well, so it's nice that it's been immortalized in that live release. And I talk quite a bit about this being a Marco song, but actually, very interestingly, is that this is kind of to be considered a Thomas solo song. So in a few quotes that I found, Thomas talks about the track and says it's more of a solo track, but he didn't quite feel comfortable releasing it under his own name. Of course, this would change a few years later with the Scrooge McDuck release that I discussed a few weeks ago. Check out that episode. We spoke to Alan Reed, who does the voice for Scrooge McDuck on that record, and it's a really fantastic little chat with him, so do check that out. But back to While Your Lips Are Still Red, it's really interesting to see that Thomas wasn't in a position at that point, and maybe understandably so. Don't forget that this was recorded around the Dark Passion Play era. Like I said, it was on the Amaranth single, and that was when Thomas was definitely at his lowest ebb, at least from what we've learned from interviews with the whole split with Tarja. And all of that inspiring the material that he made, it's probably not a surprise that he didn't want to venture out into anything too new at that point. He probably wasn't even sure how the reception would be to Dark Passion Play, so perhaps he just wanted to tie himself a little bit closer to Nightwish at that point, and a little bit later, when he felt more confident, he was able to go on and do his solo project. But the couple of other band members do feature on this. So the personnel section does credit Marco, of course, on vocals and bass, Thomas on keys and songwriting duties, but also Yuka was on drums for this song. In the video, it's just Marco and Thomas that we see. Again, a big departure for a Nightwish video, who pretty much always have the female vocalist front and center. Even on The Islander, Annette is still a really key part of that video. So it's a very different Nightwish video to check out. There's not actually that much happening. If you are like me, I'm not huge on like compilation videos. So I'm not huge on live videos, you know, where they do like a live from my European tour with various cuts. Just doesn't really do it for me. And likewise with this one, it's linked to the film, which we'll discuss in a moment. And so there's a lot of clips from the film, which I always feel like don't really fully make sense if you don't know the plot of the film. But having said all of that, I did watch it for this podcast. I haven't watched it in a while, and it was quite nice. I think it's edited well, and the moments with the film, the scenes, they are placed very consciously so that they work well with the way the song swells and reaches that epic finale. So yeah, it's just not really to my taste, those kind of videos. But if you are into that, if you like to see Thomas walking behind Marco and looking like a creeper, this is the video for you. You will absolutely love it. I'm quite surprised I've got this far and not mentioned the Made in Hong Kong release. In fact, I don't think I've mentioned it on any of my podcasts, which is quite interesting. I always find this release to be quite an anomaly in the Nightwish discography, because we're so used to their live cuts being a full show. That's what we expect. End of Innocence, I suppose, is also a little bit different because that is primarily a documentary with some live performances tacked on. But this one, it seems to be just a bit of a compilation of various things. So we have half a CD of live tracks from Dark Passion Play with Annette on vocals, and then the Escapist B-side from Bye Bye Beautiful and While Your Lips Are Still Red from Amaranth, and a demo of Cadence of Her Last Breath almost tacked on there at the end. And then the DVD doesn't actually feature any live performances in full. It does have a little bit of a documentary, Back in the Day Is Now, I think it's called, and I haven't watched that for a couple months, but I do remember it being quite short compared to their other documentaries, but that might just be the way I'm remembering it. And then the music videos. So absolutely, it's a fair enough release. I enjoy hearing the live versions with Annette, but it just feels a little bit strange, especially because when Nightwish have dedicated themselves to live releases or DVD releases like this, they have been something quite spectacular. Showtime Storytime, for example. And even From Wishes to Eternity, which I go back to quite often, I enjoy watching, and End of an Era, that show is just going to go down in history. So this one just feels a little bit of a whimper, I feel, compared to the others. And like I say, more of a compilation of various things. Not to say that it's not worth digging out. If you're listening to this podcast, then you will love this because, you know, we love to hear different takes on the songs. We love to hear live versions. We love to own those music videos for, like, The Island is Gorgeous. Why wouldn't you want to own that? But for your casual fan, I don't imagine it would offer that much. And it's also interesting, but probably understandable, that the only songs included here are from Dark Passion Play, the live versions. And I think that is probably fair, especially as Annette was still quite new to the band. She was finding her way, and the Taria songs are so difficult, and she got such a hard time from a lot of fans trying to take on songs like Wishmaster. She has such a different style, and I don't think certain people are ready for that. Maybe more so when it's a new song and we only hear it in the Annette style, you can accept it a little bit more. But these fans that were so in love with the original versions, these Taria versions of songs, were very critical of Annette's covering of them and doing them in a different style. So it's probably for the best that they were left out. But it is something that we see quite a lot. Not so much with Annette, but definitely with Floor, in that people really want to see re-recordings of old versions with the new vocalist, especially because Floor's versions of songs like Ghost Love Score, Devil in the Deep Dark Ocean, Elven Path, they are very much loved by the fans, and those live cuts that we've got on the Decades Tour and on the Showtime Storytime show are really special and watched millions of times on YouTube. So possibly that's the reason people long for it from Floor. But all in all, I would love to know what you think of the Made in Hong Kong DVD. Remember, there are a few funny moments on the little documentary. There always are, and they're always really nice to see as well, because I think the band, when they're promoting and talking, especially Thomas, about these really deep songs that he's written, especially in this Dark Passion Play era, it can feel like they're such a serious band. So it's really nice to watch these documentaries and see that there's definitely a fun side to them. As I sat down to look at the lyrics for While Your Lips Are Still Red, it kind of dawned on me that this is a little bit of a departure for Thomas. It's a song that is about pure love, and that's not necessarily something he discusses too much. It's definitely a part of their music, and you hear it in numerous songs. But if we think about the era that this came from, Dark Passion Play, that whole album seems to be very often quite depressive and really coming from a low place. And even Most of Once and Century Child in particular, very dark moments on those records. So it's really nice to see this one that just feels like a pure love song. I think, and when I say that, I don't mean to discredit it, because I think that Thomas is such a wonderful, he has such a beautiful way with words. I mean, that first line that I made a joke about right at the start, it's so effective. Sweet little words made for silence, not talk. It's about enjoying those moments with the people that you love. Young heart for love, not heartache. Dark hair for catching the wind, not to veil the sight of a cold world. In general, this song feels to me like living in the moment, enjoying what you have. Quite often we can get so anxious and worried about the future that we forget to live in the moment and enjoy what we have here and now. And that title lyric, it captures it beautifully. Kiss while your lips are still red, while you still have chance, while you're still alive, enjoy your life. I find that I do this quite a lot. I get so anxious and worried about something, and then it kind of goes without a hitch, and I feel regretful that I've wasted sometimes whole weekends worrying about something just for it to work out in the end. Of course, anxiety is a difficult thing to handle, and we all have our own ways of getting through it, and it's not just as easy as turning it off. But I think the message in this song is really noble and very fitting for quite an anxious time such as now. We are all locked at home, and that can feel horrible because we're constantly reminded of the things that we can't do. We can't go to gigs. I talked about that at the start of this episode. It's something that I love doing. We can't see many of our friends, but sometimes it's good to turn that angle on itself and remember what we do have. That a lot of families who barely got a couple of hours together each evening and now getting weeks upon weeks together to spend time with one another, and it's about embracing that. I'm not saying that Thomas foresaw the quarantine and the pandemic. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that this message of this song feels very appropriate for a time like now. It's about embracing what you have instead of worrying about what is to come. And that what is to come, it's kind of hinted at a couple of times in that lyric I just read, not to veil the sight of a cold world. It is aware that there is sadness and misery surrounding these characters that Thomas is writing about. Almost a little bit later, there was another one. Love while the night still hides the withering dawn. It's almost like that day represents something negative. Are these people going to be pulled apart? Are they going to have to struggle through another day? Sometimes we can all feel like that, especially if we're having a dark time. We can almost dread the sun coming up because we have to face another day, albeit with work, with studying, with relationships, you know, whatever it might be that we're struggling with. And this song, it tells you that if you're feeling something good, if you're feeling something positive, be in that moment and enjoy it and embrace it whilst it lasts. And I think that's a really lovely message. And it's a very simple one, because quite often with Nightwish lyrics, they can be quite complex. And that's something I really love about it. But I do wonder if this song resonated so well with so many people because it is so simple. People love love. We all feel it. We can all relate to it. And that's probably the reason it's such a popular lyrical choice. People talk about it all the time, especially in mainstream music. I mean, Celine Dion, God bless her, she's made a career out of it. And now I realize I've spoke about Celine Dion for two episodes in a row. I am such a stereotype. But I think it's nice to hear Thomas's take on it, because as I said, he is such a poet and he knows it. And you know, earlier in the song where it says, "The poet's hand, every thawing heart plays your theme with care," it feels like for whatever he was going through in this dark passion play era, this was a moment of love and of appreciation and of reminding himself what he had, the positive things within his own life. I did a little bit of digging around the title phrase, and I found this quote from a Japanese drama film called Ikiru. And Ikiru means to live, and the quote is, "Life is so short. Fall in love, dear maiden, while your lips are still red and before you are cold, for there will be no tomorrow." Certainly seems that it was an influence. That lyric is hard to miss right there in the middle of that quote, but it seems the message is very much the same about living in the moment and enjoying your life while you still have it. On the press release for Amaranth, they said about this song, "Though While Your Lips Are Still Red is not exactly a Nightwish track, it will be included as a bonus track on Nightwish's forthcoming Amaranth CD single." Interesting again then to see them referring to this as not your typical Nightwish track, because for a lot of people, this is the ultimate Nightwish track. I thought that was very interesting. And an interview with Darkside.ru with Thomas, they spoke about the song being on a soundtrack. And they asked the question, "You wrote the song While Your Lips Are Still Red, which became a soundtrack of one film. How did it happen that you got involved in cinema?" And Thomas said, "This is because the Finnish movie director, Marko Polonen, he lives quite close to where I live. Just one day, I think it was last November, he called me and said, 'I'm doing this new movie called Lieksa. Would you like to do a kind of theme song or the theme of the main character of the movie if you're interested?' And when I went to see him and do some parts of the movie, I was immediately hooked and said, 'Yes, I want to do this.' So it was our director who inspired us to do it. I haven't seen the film yet, so I don't even know the plot exactly. I know that it's about Finnish countryside, about this group of people who are moving from one place to another, and it's kind of a drama." Now, from what I could find reading up on this film, Lieksa, or The Matriarch, to give it its English title, it does seem to be a comedic drama. So here's the synopsis that I found. Martha and Otto are a pair of traveling tailors who claim to be bastard descendants of the Romanovs and wander from town to town in Finland seeking work, accompanied by their two half-witted adult sons, Hippo, Rep, and equally silly son-in-law, Venti. The family occasionally turns to crime when they can't quite make ends meet. Lieksa seemed to get mixed reviews. The Finnish title is actually the name of a place in Finland, Lieksa. I'm probably saying it wrong, I apologise. But it seems that a lot of the reviews loved the landscape of Finland. That's something that when you're travelling with a movie is really nice to show off. And especially a country like Finland, which is maybe not as well known for its landscapes and its beauty, it's nice to see that people responded to that. But generally I found the reviews were quite mixed or middling. So if anyone has seen the film, let us know. I'd love to hear how the song in particular fit within the movie. I'm kind of assuming it was tacked on to the end in the credits. Usually these theme songs are just put on at the end of the film in the credits section, but I don't know if it was put into the actual film, so part of the way through, you know. If there's a romantic love scene and Marco's voice just comes onto the screen, that would be quite nice. But yeah, I'd love to hear. I haven't seen the film and I can't even find too much about it. From reviews, a lot of them seem to be quite simplistic, and none of them I've seen mention the song. So if you have seen it, especially if you're in Finland, I would love to hear what you think of that film. If we did get one thing out of that whole collaboration, it's this discussion of a long-burning topic that people asked Thomas about, and that is about scoring a film. So Untitled Interviews mentioned While Your Lips Are Still Red, as well as Thomas's influences from fantastic film composers, and he's mentioned that quite a lot. They asked him thinking about that, would he write a soundtrack for a film? And Thomas said, I wish I could. That has been a dream of mine for years, but it would need to be something that really strikes my fancy. I wouldn't be interested in writing a score for a romantic comedy. It has to be something interesting. A nature documentary for Discovery Channel, or even a really cool game. I'd love to do The Elder Scrolls, something like that. Anyway, at the moment, Nightwish is by far my main priority, so that's what I want to focus on for my near future. I can see myself in my 50s doing something like that, though, if somebody's interested. So Thomas was putting out the call back then, and it's interesting to look at this in hindsight, because we know that Thomas definitely has his links with soundtracks after this. For me, there are three main examples. I mentioned it earlier, Scrooge McDuck. It is, in a way, a soundtrack. Maybe not to a film, but certainly to a comic. And it seems that the approach was very much like scoring a movie. Thomas was taking these stories and writing music to them. But a more obvious, I mean, even by the name, Imaginarium the Score, that's a perfect example. The film would come a little bit later, actually shortly after, because it was after Dark Passion Play that they started working on Imaginarium. Although I do wonder what came first on the Imaginarium, because I know that they were working on a film and we were hearing about that whilst the album was being recorded. So I wonder if it was a bit of a dual approach, in that Thomas was writing these songs for the record that were nicely adapted to the score, or vice versa. Perhaps he was scoring a section which lent into a nice part for the record. I'm not sure how that worked. When I do some digging into the Imaginarium score, which I will do on this podcast, then we'll have a deeper look into that. But then the last thing has to be All the Works of Nature Which Adorn the World, which for me goes back to his quote that he would be interested in doing like a nature documentary. That to me is a score. It's a beautiful orchestral soundscape. Although it's not a film necessarily that it is scoring, it is the film of life. Sounds so pretentious, but seriously, that it scores the seasons, it scores nature and the development of nature through to snow, through to the moors, through to the ocean. So I do think that although we haven't necessarily seen Thomas working on some big budget Hollywood film, we have seen that come to fruition with his work on various films and visual media. Hello, I am in my back room, my editing suite, I should say, and I'm editing this episode and realized that I didn't record anything between the end of Why Your Lips Are Still Red and the beginning of the Nemesis interview, so it sounded very disjointed. So I'm literally just here to say, that's your lot for While Your Lips Are Still Red, but don't go anywhere, because I'm about to talk to Nemesis and they're awesome. Hailing from Floor Jansen's homeland of Holland, today's guest I am so excited to have on the podcast. I've been a fan of Nemesis for many, many years, and they certainly have a fair few links with Nightwish. Not only did they tour supporting Floor and her After Forever days, they also beefed out their earlier set list with a cover of Bless the Child and cited Nightwish as a strong influence for their debut record, Manor. Now, while that album sits firmly in the symphonic genre and really does stand the test of time, their style has moved on quite considerably to the electro rock of their sophomore album, In Control, merging that gothic ambience with the more straightforward rock on The Quiet Resistance, and their latest album, White Flag, with previous singer Sanna, which is a lot more in the alternative rock world. Recently, they parted ways with Sanna, and it came down to HJ to take vocals on their last two releases, New Year's Day and Wake Up. I'm so excited to talk to them. Here's my chat with Nemesis. Hello to HJ and Sunny. Thank you so much for taking the time to answer my questions and joining us on the podcast. My first question has to be about the new single. So, you released a new track, Wake Up, during lockdown. Whilst all of us were having a rest, you were out there putting out new music. So how did that come about?
Originally, the song was meant for White Flag. But it did not make the album. So what was the reason again?
It was more suitable for male voice. So it didn't really work.
No.
So it didn't make the album.
No.
Album.
No, so we had this lying around on like a digital shelf or something. And then during lockdown, we thought, well, we want to release some music. So we got that song back into the mix again. And
Redid the guitar parts and the bass parts.
Yeah, because we recorded the drums already for it. That was how it
was done.
So, yeah, and since we already had a song released at the 1st of January, it's a cover by a cover of a U2 song, New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, maybe just try this one also with a male vocal. So that's how Wake Up came about.
Yep.
So if we can rewind quite considerably, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how Nemesis started as a band and who formed the band all those years ago.
That's a long time ago.
We started the band during our study at the conservatory here in Groningen. Yeah, and then Manda was the singer. She had the idea of forming a female-fronted, well, metal or rock band. And, we listened to some bands she was listening to a lot, because, honestly, I think for me, those bands, I never heard those bands like Nightwish or After Forever or Within Temptation. I never heard that music before. I think the same is for you, right?
Yeah.
So we listened to it, and we had the idea that we could make something of that. So we started rehearsing, and we rehearsed songs of those bands. I remember.
Yeah.
So
at least the first four or five rehearsals.
Yeah, we just took songs of With Invitation and After Forever, and we just figured out how to play that, and we just started rehearsing because we wanted to become a tight band. So that was for us a good way to get to know each other also musically. I think we started to write some...
Yeah. It didn't take long before we had a first demo. I can't remember that.
Yeah, there was we had a first demo quite fast that contained like an After Forever song and a two original songs, I think. Yeah.
Angel in the Dark, I think.
Yeah, Angel in the Dark was one of the first songs. And we sent that demo to some venues in Holland. I think this was after 6 months of rehearsing, and then luckily we could open for After Forever probably because we did an After Forever song. So the guy that booked the band probably thought, well, maybe this is like a good match and with a support act or so, something like that, probably. So yeah, and from that moment on, Sonny, what happened?
All hell broke loose. After Forever asked if we could do for the next tour in Holland, the support act.
Yeah,
support was quite cool.
Yeah, so we were like rehearsing for one, I think, a half year or something, maybe a little bit more, and then we could play all those shows. That was incredible because we just started and we opened for venues that were completely filled with fans, so we had a good exposure immediately.
Good start.
And
we got signed, to a local label in Groningen,
because of the playing, we were playing live a lot, and
they noticed us,
and so we got signed to a label and we released the Mana album.
Yeah, that's how it started.
I really want to ask you guys, particularly taking a steer from the podcast being a Nightwish podcast, What is your response to Floor's recent success, particularly when she's moved to Nightwish? I mean, After Forever were really big and you toured with them, but Nightwish just seemed to be a next level for Floor, and she's now gaining international acclaim. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel really proud?
Yeah, of course we're proud of Floor. That's it's really nice for her to do this well with this great band. And she got recognized in Holland as well this last couple of years.
Yeah, but at first already with Aft Forever.
Yeah.
We really got to know the band when we were touring.
Yeah.
It was also always great to see the band perform and her.
Yeah. Great singing. Vocalist. Yeah. And well, when After Forever was like ending, that was really difficult for her, of course. So it's really nice to see her perform again in this great band. So yeah, props.
So harking back a little bit to my second question, could you talk a little bit about how your sound and influences have changed over the years? I mentioned just before the interview, but the sound on Mana, very symphonic and leaning into your influences of Nightwish and After Forever, is very different to an album like White Flag, which you released a couple years ago, which I feel is more hard rock and quite straightforward alternative music. So what has changed for Nemesis over the years?
Mana is really different because we tried to make an album that was more influenced by the bands we listened to
and played with as
and
well.
Played with, yeah. And the songs we rehearsed. So at first we thought that is the direction we
we wanted to go. And that was also the direction probably at that time.
Yeah.
But when you play live with bands and you play the music live and you have a group of people together and then
Everybody came from a different musical background, so we try to fuse that together.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus we,
which is not easy.
Not easy at all. But it also, we changed the direction also because we didn't have the feeling we created something unique or something. No. You know,
we thought everybody was doing more or less the same.
Yeah, and we thought, well, maybe we want to just connect to more what we like to do. I think the
reach a different audience maybe as well.
Yeah. So and I think Manda, her singing was really great on Mana, and but the music we thought was we could get more out of it, more a different direction. What would make us have a more own unique sound.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
I think then when we brought these electronic influences instead of these classical influences on In Control.
Yeah, that was basically the idea to replace the strings and the choirs with more modern
electronic sounds, because that's something we all liked. You know, we all liked the Prodigy. We all liked this electronic music that was going on around that time. So that wasn't like for us the way to go. So, but the sound was changing quite drastically then. And we tried to maintain that aspect as well. So when we were signed to Napalm and made the TQR album, Napalm was pushing us a little bit in the direction of Mana because they wanted to have this
back to where we came
from. But this more metal kind of thing, and we said okay, well, that's not really what we want to do, so we tried to combine it a little bit more.
So the album is more like a mix between
It's dark, has a dark sound, but also the electronic sound
still there.
And then Lasse Delbrücke was joining us on keys, and he came from orphanage. So yeah, he made this
good memory.
A good memory. Pretty so well. he was really adding something, a good flavor to the mix then. And then we got into the studio with Guido Albers.
In Zwolle
City. And well, we, and this is a difficult word for me,
deliberately
chose to record like a more live feel album. So
yeah, instead of track by track
and less keys. I think there are of course keys, but less keys. And then Manda decided to leave the band, so she focused on her
teaching career,
and we had to look for a new vocalist, and that was Sanne Milo. Yeah. So different voice, different vibe, this different person. So yeah, then the music changes also.
So yeah, always have to adapt to the voice.
Yeah. Yeah, very important to so White Flag is more like a little bit of raw rock album, I think. Also keys, but also the live band idea. We recorded it in a
abandoned house.
So we had this setup, you know, recording setup.
Drums in the kitchen,
and just try to capture a certain sound, a certain feel. So yeah.
And in terms of influences over the years, well, everybody listens to different bands all the time. So.
And you always take also changes, right?
That's what I mean. So your albums change.
Yeah.
I remember back when I was following you guys after Mana, waiting, longing for a follow-up, and you did something that was quite forward-thinking for a band, and that was to go the crowdfunding route. So it was through Celeband, of course, which I believe is now defunct. But I believed in you, and I gave you some of my money, and in response I got the In Control album, and I think even printed a lot of fans' names in there. Now, crowdfunding these days is so common, it seems a lot of bands are doing it. I know Serenia, who are quite a big band in symphonic metal, they do it for most of their records now, and various artists across various genres. So the logical question would be, would you ever be interested in doing another crowdfunding project for a future album?
Well, thank you for being a believer on Celeband.
Yeah, awesome.
At the time it was a good idea, it was new. I think it was, like we said before, one of the first crowdfunding platforms. We thought it would be a great match, and it was a great idea and a great project, but I don't think we, at this point, we would be using crowdfunding for a new album.
We just did that once, and then we tried it, and it worked out really well. It was a really fun time. We learned a lot about the music industry as well. Yeah, but not really to do it again, right?
No, right now we... don't see yourself signing up to another crowdfunding platform.
No.
So in those earlier years of Nemesi, you did have Bless the Child on the set list. So of course I have to ask about that. It would be foolish of me not to mention it. So how did that come about? And is that one of your favorite Nightwish songs? Do you have any other favorite Nightwish songs as well?
Well, when we started playing live, we needed more songs to fill our set. Manda was already listening to Nightwish a lot, and Blessed Child
was a song that we rehearsed already. And in the beginning, so
it fell into the set pretty easily. So
yeah,
that's why we picked it.
And the reaction of the crowd was really good. So the first time we played live and we played this Bless the Child, that was really, it got a good response. So we said, well, just we keep that one in. And then we wrote more original songs. So the cover songs would be like replaced, of course, with own material. But we always kept Bless the Child in the set because it It's a great song and it works. And talking about favorite Nightwish songs, I don't know. I think Nemo is probably my favorite song.
Yeah, mine too.
And I really like Sleeping Sun because it's a great, beautiful ballad. And yeah, those are the two songs that come to mind.
So before we draw this to a close, I have to ask probably the most obvious question, and that is, what is going to happen next for Nemesis? Sana recently left the band, so are you going to be looking for a new vocalist? How do you plan on moving forward, and what can we expect from the band in the coming months?
Well, what's next for the band? Right now we are working on some surprises, probably.
Yeah.
We are working on a song with some guests, special guests. So we will release this year some songs, of course. Writing some new songs as well.
Yeah, when it comes to a new vocalist, maybe we'll do another contest. Last time.
Yeah, maybe
we might do that. Might be a fun thing to do. But that won't be until really next year.
Hello again. I'm back in the back room, and I've also found that I didn't record an outro for this episode. So it's taken me 36 episodes, but I've finally just cracked, guys. I've lost the plot. So this is going to have to do. I'm so sorry that it's so echoey, but past me, you messed up, mate. You messed it up. I hope that I will deliver you a professional episode next week with all of the pieces in the right places. Until then, I want to say thank you for listening. Thank you to Nemesis for being a guest. Thank you to Kiki for being a wonderful guest, as always. And next week, we will be back to talk about another Nightwish song. I will see you then. The Podcast and the Pendulum is not affiliated with Nightwish, Nuclear Blast, or any associated record labels. This is a fan-run podcast, and we upload episodes every Wednesday. Please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.